Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, well, welcome to this very special TFL Talk podcast, and I've got a very special guest, Steve. Thank you for coming down. Steve is a friend of mine. He also is an extraordinary off-roader, and we're going to be talking about what you built, which is, I think, the world's most badass defender.
I'd like to think so. So Socorro in the shop and our guys just finished this about 4 weeks ago, and we hit Ouray with a Rover rally for the weekend a couple weeks ago, and then we just took it on the Rubicon Trail a little over a week ago. So
you can just look at me. It's fine. Okay. I know the camera's there, but don't worry about that. Just look at me. So in this episode, we're not only going to be talking about Kong and how you built it and how it went over the Rubicon Trail, but you're also a Jeep guy. So we'll do a little bit of Jeep versus Land Rover discussion. You got a 392, I know, as your personal vehicle as well.
We've got a 392 and a couple classic CJs and a couple TJs and a 4Runner, and we have a Bronco on order. And yeah, so our company has 37 dealerships, so we are partial to many brands.
Did I say you're the manager of the Land Rover Denver store?
Yeah, so VPGM there at Land Rover Denver, so have to be PC, right? But that's kind of where this was born.
All right, so Matt, roll the open, and let's talk about the Rubicon. Welcome to TFL Talk, the official podcast of TFL Studios, where we talk about the best, and yes, even sometimes the worst new cars. We talk about the coolest and sometimes the least uncool old cars. And of course, we give you an insider's view of all things automotive, and hopefully we do it having fun and sometimes arguing. So if you're driving, keep driving, and if you're not, why not? All right, Steve, so before we talk about the Rubicon and how you went over it and how much damage you did going through it, let's talk about Kong and the build, right? So as you know, Land Rover has a stellar reputation for building off-roaders, and when the new Land Rover came around with the Defender model, a lot of people were like, hey, this thing is more of a mall crawler than an off-roader. But looking at Kong here, which if you're listening to this, you should probably go to AllTFL because we'll probably have a video about it. You'll be impressed immediately that it's rolling on 37s.
Correct.
That it's got, it's got every bit of off-road gear I've ever seen on an off-roader. So tell me about how you got to building this monster Defender.
Yeah, so this is our fifth build. We had Big Barry before that, and Big Bertha before that, and Mudflap, and Big Wheel. So it's been an evolution. This one's on 37s with a 5-inch lift from J. Austin Fabrication. And then we're running on 20-inch wheels from Wheel Pros and a 37-inch Toyo Open Country MT. And then we added a Voyager rack and then some Lucky 8 sliders, a Warn 10S Platinum winch, which I highly recommend, not because we got paid anything, because we didn't, but it's fantastic.
Yeah, they make good winches.
Yeah. And then we did some custom things. So we have full belly skids on this one. It's 3/16-inch steel plating. And then Lucky 8 fabbed up some rear control arm sliders for us, which we definitely used on the Rubicon. And then we kind of integrated the factory front skid into the subframe and connected it to our steel skid plates.
Now, unlike a Jeep, obviously, a Land Rover has independent suspension all around.
Correct.
And vehicles with independent suspension are much trickier to lift, especially if you want to roll on 37s, because you get to do things like relocate coolers, I think, right? Because I think in the side of this thing, under the headlights, there were intercoolers, right, that had to be moved.
Yes, so there's two coolers from the factory. We relocated one underneath the engine in the subframe and then removed the second one. Those coolers go to the transfer case and transmission, and more for towing, really, than drivability. So would impact the overall tow capacity, I'm sure. We don't have that number yet.
So tell me, how did you go about lifting it? How do you lift the independent suspension? Because, look, in a Jeep, right, you've got solid axles, so that's not that hard, right? You can basically separate the body from the chassis, ladder frame, right? It's something that's been done over and over. The Jeep is actually, in some ways, meant to be lifted, but this is not meant to be lifted.
Yeah, this is a complicated surgical procedure. So it's a 5-inch subframe lift, and there's a front and rear subframe on the new Defender. So this is basically an entire assembly that you bolt into the subframe that lowers the subframe and or raises the body at the same time. Keeps the same geometry of the engine and the driveline, all the steering components, so there's no additional fatigue or stress on those because they're sitting in their factory position. All we've done is increased ground clearance with tires and increased the ability to put them under there.
But these kits don't exist. You had to make this up as you went along.
So Jay Austin is a customer of ours and a friend of ours, and he's been hand building these. And he does them one at a time, and it's a labor of love for him for sure. So this is our third kit we've put under one of our vehicles of his, and then we've been doing customer builds as well.
And how many hours does it take? How many hours? That's two questions. How many hours are you into this Kong build, and how many hours is the lift?
Well, Socorro's into this build way more than I am.
Yeah.
He and the guys in the shop, we're probably 2 solid weeks on this build to get it to where we can put it on the trade. Yeah, easy. Probably well over 100.
Okay.
Yeah, we're a Jeep, in the weekend you can put some springs under there.
Exactly.
And it's a quicker build.
You could do it in one day.
Yeah.
When you set out to do this, and you said this is your fifth build now, did you set out to build the most capable off-roading Defender? Was that the goal? Because it certainly looks to me like it is the most capable.
Yeah, it's named Kong for a reason. Our intent was to build, we're pushing the envelope on this chassis and this platform. We want to prove what it can do, and we went out to the Rubicon with a great group and did just that.
So all right, so let's talk about the Rubicon.
Yeah.
So you were out there with how many Land Rovers?
So it was 30-plus total Rovers from the NorCal Land Rover Club. Great group, rowdy crowd, super fun. The group you go with always makes the trip. We had an absolute blast.
Yeah, so let me define the Rubicon. I've been lucky enough to do it twice with Jeep. Once I did it in a Wrangler, the JL, and once I did it in the Gladiator, which was not as happy because it's a longer wheelbase. But the Rubicon isn't long. I want to say it's, maybe 13 miles or something?
It's 21 miles all the way, but the last four are kind of dirt roads.
Yeah, so. The last four are dirt roads with these, cantaloupe-sized rocks that make for a very unpleasant drive. There are well-known obstacles along the way, starting with the gatekeeper. And it's one of those kinds of trails where you could walk it faster than you can run it. So that, I think, gives people an idea of how technically difficult it is. It's just a lot of very difficult off-camber ground, I would say off-road braking, all kinds of funky rocks from, like I said, from the groundkeeper. Well, we'll talk about the different obstacles. What makes it really unique, of course, is that Jeep has now named their highest level of off-roader based on it. And so, when a Jeep is trail rated, they mean it can take on the Rubicon Trail.
Correct.
It's an adventure, for sure. It's not easy. Tell me about your trip and how you decided and why you decided to do the Rubicon.
And
it also changes, right? Because every year it changes because, they get storms and the obstacles change. They don't stay the same.
Yeah, boulders move with snow and ice and rain and everything else. And then you have groups come in with large groups that maybe
move
stack
rocks
or move boulders, in their favor or maybe to make it more difficult as well. So, Yeah, my understanding is it's never the same trail.
It's unforgiving. It's not like you figure, okay, I got over the gatekeeper, I'm good, and boom, right away into the next one.
It's relentlessly beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how I would describe it. It's just nonstop picking a line for 21 miles. And it's really hard on equipment. You're constantly paying attention to your next line, so mentally it's pretty demanding trail.
And about halfway through, the Jeep Jamboree guys have a camp. Did you stop at that camp?
Yeah, so we stayed the second night when we were on the trail. We stayed at Rubicon Springs. So,
okay,
gorgeous. I mean, just a beautiful trip. So this event's called Rovacon, and the NorCal Land Rover crew they put it together. And it's limited, I think, to maybe 36 total vehicles, and we had a couple that couldn't make it due to personal reasons or COVID or whatever, but we had, I believe, 30 plus on this run, and just a super fun group. I mean, they're just diehard Land Rover guys, and it was really fun to be on the Rubicon and run into other brands. They were excited we were out there and doing what we were doing.
Yeah, so look, if you were to ask me like what the best vehicle for the Rubicon Trail would be, it wouldn't be your vehicle just because it's too pretty and too nice and too expensive, right? I would say you get like maybe a Cherokee, put a 6-inch lift on it, right? A $4,000 Cherokee with a 6-inch lift with that old straight six and a bashed up body, because it's going to be more bashed up by the time you get off of it, right? This is a trail that punishes vehicles like no other, right?
Yeah, you're going to have some body damage for sure. So maybe that Cherokee has no glass too.
Yeah, exactly. So. By the end of it. So what kind of Land Rovers were on this trip? Who?
So it was a lot of classics. Some Series 1, Series 2, a bunch of Defender 90s, 110s.
Stock?
Some stock, yeah. Yeah, there were some stock 90s.
And
oh, yeah. Yeah,
drove without right winching?
Through. There may have been some winching. I will say we never pulled cable for Kong. Kong drove through everything all on his own. We were never strapped out or pulled cable. So that's a big win.
I'm betting you stacked a lot of rocks for some of these, standard, off-the-shelf Defenders.
I don't recall us stacking rocks for anything, but I'm sure we did somewhere.
Okay, all right.
We didn't for Kong, I can tell you that.
All right, and so brave people taking their brand new Defenders. And of course, the Defender went kind of from being this very square bodied, very basic off-roader to being a much more modern, with all the amenities. So it went from a V8 or a diesel, depending on whichever one you end up with, I think there are, what, 3 powertrains now you can get in the Defender?
Yeah, so this one's a V8, 518 horsepower supercharged, and then there's a 6-cylinder mild hybrid.
And a 4-cylinder turbo.
And a 4-cylinder turbo,
yeah,
yes.
So 3 powertrains. So you've got the top of the line.
This is the big dog.
This is the big dog.
So we actually ordered this car to run this back in 21 with Rovacon, and then there weren't enough parts for the United States, so they only built 40 or 50 units, and it didn't come until this year. And then, we had another build, the Trophy Edition, which is Big Berry, and we would have taken that, but then there were fires last year when we were supposed to go at the Rubicon, so we couldn't go.
All right, so walk me through what it was like getting through. Let's start with the Gatekeeper.
Yeah.
So the Gatekeeper is basically this. Well, it's a Gatekeeper. It's kind of a an off camber rock stack with trees on either side, which makes it tricky because if you get it wrong, you will roll into a tree.
Yeah. So if you'll notice on our rack, we actually had Voyager make some rack sliders, and I had some comments, "Hey, that's funny." And we used them half a dozen times on this trail because you articulate into the trees, and we were actually sliding on those rack. Those sliders,
which is better than sliding on the side of the vehicle.
Yeah. So we sustained one little mark behind the right rear wheel. That was where a tree slid off of that rack, and then I went into a hole in the Gatekeeper first 100 yards of the trail and scuffed the lower bumper there. And then we've got one other spot on the front left.
So how do you make the rack? How do you attach the rack in such a way that it can carry the weight of the vehicle?
So that particular rack is rated for 1,000 pounds from Voyager. Okay. So you can put rooftop tents on it.
Because most of them are rated barely for a rooftop tent, right? Yeah, they're a couple hundred pounds.
The factory rack would not have sustained that lateral
hit.
You know, weight the truck on there. And usually when you're tipping into a tree, it's pretty slow motion, and it's not an impact.
Like
it's a slow, you know, dip into it. But we did. We used those, half a dozen times we were touching trees with those.
So the thing about I've done it with a group of, Wranglers and Gladiators, but you go very slowly, right? So, like, usually you have spotters. Did you guys have spotters?
We had them when we needed them.
Yeah.
Little sluice and some of those obstacles, certainly going through the big rock. I can't remember the name of it.
Had you done it before? Was this your first
time? I had not.
Your first
so,
time.
Yeah, we're pretty much Moab in Colorado.
So what surprised you about it?
It was beautifully torturous. Mm. I mean, that's the best way to describe it.
Yeah, like here in Colorado, let's say you do a typical obstacle. There's maybe one or two typical run. There's maybe one or two obstacles. Right here, it's just one after another after another.
Yeah.
It's not like it's like probably the most obstacles on any trail that I know of.
Yeah, you go to Moab and you've got a lot of nice. I wouldn't say it's paved, but that slick rock is pretty smooth. Where this, you're literally driving over stacked rocks the whole way.
Yeah.
I mean, it just never stops.
Yeah. Yeah. And so how did the other vehicles fare? So, I mean, obviously you've built out a vehicle that, if any vehicle can do it, it's Kong, but how about like a standard Defender? How did it do?
So we had no breakage. So we ran the entire trail, didn't break. I know some of the guys, we had, an axle failure, a hub failure, just some little things here and there.
Did they have stock tires, or did they go after?
They're both. There were some guys running D90s on stock tires, and then there were some guys up to, I think there was some 37s on some super built, old Series 1, Series 2 stuff that was really cool.
Like Chris has.
Giant V8s. I mean, they were sweet. I mean,
are you thinking like Chris's yellow rig, like that?
Yeah, okay. Like that, probably even more so. I mean, because they had, 6-liter V8s and one I think was two twin turbocharged.
What was the least off-road worthy one that made it through? The one that you were like, oh, that's not going to make it, and then
the stock 90s were probably the least prepared as far as building. You know, they were off the shelf, and they ran right through it. So
one of the things that obviously Jeep does that Land Rover doesn't necessarily do is lockers, and this is one trail that certainly rewards lockers. So obviously Land Rover pioneered and were the first to come out with the terrain management system where it sends power depending on where it's needed. But, you and me both know that there's nothing like having everything locked all the time, especially on something like the Rubicon Trail. So how did the guys without lockers, or were there guys without lockers, do?
Everybody had lockers. There's one guy, Don, that always likes to point out when he's turned them on.
Okay.
Because he likes to run a long way without them, which is super cool. That's a good nod to when you've got a great setup, when you can make it through a lot of stuff without lockers. But, Kong has a center locker, rear locker, and then front locking diff, like an anti-spin, which kicks in.
Like a torsion.
It's like a viscous coupling, like a friction limited slip. So it kicks in. There's a lot of technology in the new Defender. To be honest, on that trail, we turned it all off and turned traction control off, and it woke the truck up because the vehicle would think you're in a skid or you're in some kind of a panic situation, and it would cut power to the engine to protect you, as it should. And turning it all off allowed you to heat up tires and climb rocks and do what you needed to do. Most of the trails in Colorado or even Moab, we leave that on and we run maybe the rock crawl mode. But this was a different situation.
Yeah, I can't explain to you how difficult the Rubicon Trail is, because it's basically pointy rocks that you go up and over that seem to be diabolically designed to either get you off camber or get you stuck and high-centered or get you into a situation where the thing's about to roll.
Yeah, tie rods they don't like this trail. We put that 3/16 inch skids underneath the whole truck, and we hit every square inch of them.
Yeah, yeah, for
so
sure.
So I had someone reached out, said, do you think a stock Defender could run the Rubicon? And I would tell you absolutely not, because it's a ground clearance issue.
Yeah, there's just not enough.
There's not enough ground clearance.
You'll high center
it. The stock D90s got hung up on some obstacles that we drove right over.
Yeah.
You know, so we're talking about a solid axle, you know, great drivers. It just didn't have enough clearance, you know, and we literally just drove right over it.
Yeah, yeah. When we did it, we stacked. We had the Jeep Jamboree guys, and they were helping us. So they were basically, you know, a bunch of journalists, right? So this is not a group of people that necessarily off roads a lot. So they stacked a lot of rocks for us. They certainly guided us over. So we had spotters. But you're right. There was not one part of the Jeep's underbody that didn't at some point get. I mean, that's all you hear. It's like.
Screeching of steel on rock.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah. For sure. There's a lot of that.
And Jeep, of course, had to prove to us when we did it that a standard Rubicon can do it. So we did it in 2 days. So we did the first half and then spent the night at camp, you know, the Jeep Jamboree camp. And then the second day, I was like, you know what? I'm going to get into the built Jeeps. So it made my day a lot better.
Yeah, there's no replacement for tire diameter, certainly on that trail.
Well, plus you're air down, right? So you need that extra height because you're going to lose some when you – and you need to be air down to get the grip to get over these obstacles.
Yeah, we ran this mostly at 15 PSI. And then I think day two we ran at about 12.5, 13. So.
All right, so let's talk about your other vehicle, your personal vehicle, which is a 392 that you built out. Tell me what you did to that. So you're running, running 37s on there, right?
They're never done. Well, I had 39s.
Yes.
We're moving. In fact, I just mounted last night. I'm mounting 40s. We're going to Moab next week, and then we have some one-ton axles on the way. And so we're going to stage three on that one, but it's a 4.5-inch lift on adjustable King shocks and 4.5-inch Evo lift.
On 40s now.
Will be 40s.
Will be 40s. Yeah. You're building that into a complete.
Yeah, we're going to stage three, and as you know, if you get to stage three, you've lost your mind. So. So
at that point, the power that heavy puts out is needed to turn those big wheels.
Yeah.
So was there a part of you that was like, I wonder what this would do on the Rubicon? Do you want to know?
Yeah, I'd like to run it, you know, with my kids. They've got two TJs and my family, and it'd be fun to go back and run it with them. Totally different experience, obviously, with my family. But, you know, the group you go with makes the trip.
Yeah, and
these guys were awesome.
Yeah, tell me, what was fun about it?
Just a really rowdy group that are just diehard Rover guys, and they love them, and it's their culture, and just it's just a fun group, and it was great to be invited to go, and I had a blast. I mean, I'm in a lot of car clubs and groups, and absolutely, I told you before we jumped on here, but probably one of the best trips I've ever been on.
Wow. So you've got, you know, one foot in the, obviously you manage a Land Rover dealership, and then you've also, you know, part of a larger group that owns how many, 37 dealers?
Yeah, so we have 37 dealerships. Yeah. We've got Porsche, Audi, Lexus, Toyota, Ford, Aston.
What's the group
Bentley.
Called?
It's Holman Automotive out of New Jersey.
Okay. So.
And family owned. And okay. So we've got four locations in Denver, and then we're up in Portland, Seattle, great Western North, and we're down in San Diego. We have Porsche, Audi down there, and a Land Rover Jag store down there as well, and then East Coast, so mostly Florida and New Jersey.
So you've got one foot in kind of the Jeep world, one foot in the Defender world. What would you say is the difference between the two? I'm not going to ask you which one you like better. I think that'd be unfair, but tell me the difference between the two.
Yeah, I mean, the one's a howitzer and the other's a scalpel.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the 392 is you're bringing a tank to a knife fight.
Yeah.
You know, it does things really well, like crawl over rocks and the top and doors come off, and I love it for that. The Defender, you can tow 8,200 pounds, seat up to 7. You can get a 518 horsepower supercharged V8. I have my favorite thing to rib the other guys on the trail when they were really hot because they don't have air conditioning was, you know, my cooled seats are working really well over the radio and my air conditioned or refrigerated glove box, my Gatorade's really cold. And, you know, that was fun to rib back and forth on that. It's just more sophisticated. It's more refined. It's just a different animal.
How about the communities? How are they different?
That's an interesting question. I think they're very similar. Like the NorCal guys are very similar to a lot of the Jeep guys for sure, because they are diehard. You know, they're out to go use their vehicles.
Yeah. And so are Jeep guys and gals. They're both going to use at least the group that does use them uses them hard, right? There's a large group of people in both communities that will never take it off road.
For sure.
Right, but the ones that use it.
I mean, 98% of Defender owners are never going to do what we did, but they know that it can do it, and that matters. It's like 918, so I ran Porsche store for 12 years, and the 918, you know, is unobtainium for the rest of the world other than 918 people, and they like being part of that heritage and knowing that, you know, their car can do a lot of crazy, cool stuff.
All right, so I want to get your opinions. For all you off-roaders, you may want to go grab a snack because we're going to take a hard left turn here, and I want to get Steve's opinion on this.
Uh-oh.
Because I feel like I've been justified, but I may be wrong, so I want to get your opinion because you've been in the Porsche world. So come back in like 4 minutes because we're going back on road now. So I got to be one of the journalists that got to drive the new GT4 RS, right, which is a Cayman. The top of the line came in, and for a long time, Porsche kind of had the 911 as a top dog, and they kind of underpowered or maybe didn't quite give the Cayman its due. And in some ways, it's a better track car because it's mid-engine versus rear-engine, right? So yeah. I think with, you know, electrification coming and with the next 911 most likely being either a hybrid or an electric version, they let the engineers go. And so they designed what in some ways is the most track-worthy, the most, the British would say, weaponized, right? It's a weapon.
Sure.
Porsche out there. And they put it in my hands, and I got to drive it around Big Willow in California following a 911 lightweight turbo. So there's a lightweight version of the Turbo S, right, where the roof is a little bit lighter, the glass is a little bit lighter. And for the most part, I could keep up with the 911 around the turns, but the 911 has more power. The turbo especially, so on the straightaway he'd get me, but in the turns I could keep up with him. And I walked away from that thinking like I was the only guy who didn't like the car. I just did not like the car.
Wow.
And the reason I didn't like it was because it used to be once upon a time that like manufacturers built street cars that you could put on the track. But now some switch has gone off and they're building race cars that you can put on the road. And there's it's a subtle, but it's a big difference, right?
Sure.
So like with the GT4 RS, one of the things you do is you have induction, which is right next to your head. I mean, it's like right next to your head. And you've got the steering that just comes alive. So when I say I didn't like it, I loved it on the road, but I cannot see myself, I mean, I loved it on the track. I could not see myself like driving this thing as a daily driver or putting my wife or anybody I love into it because it's so race car-like, right? It's so raw. And I've heard the same thing about the new GT3 RS, right? It's as close to a race car as you can get. And I'm thinking to myself, if you're one of the lucky people who can buy one of these, then maybe you'll never actually daily it, or you'll maybe drive it to Cars and Coffee and show it off, you're right, which is probably what I would do. But as a car that you live with, race cars are freaking miserable, dude. They're just no fun.
Yeah.
Right? The there's no ground clearance, right? The steering is nervous and jittery, right? The thing doesn't come into its own until you're actually on a racetrack pushing it.
Yeah, 7 grand RPM.
And it screams and it's loud and it's uncomfortable, right? And those
isn't
carbon fiber seats. What?
Isn't it glorious?
No, it's not. It's glorious on the track, but then how often do I go on the track, right?
Sure.
So this trend, and there's a Lamborghini I drove like that too, the STO, same thing. It's basically a race car you can take on the road. And actually that one's even kind of more handicapped because it's so loud. I think it's 134 decibels that most racetracks won't allow it.
Wow.
Right? Like it's just too loud. Big Willow will allow it, but like Laguna Seca won't.
Sure.
You know? So what's your feeling on that?
Well, I mean,
I know
you're right. The GT cars certainly on Porsche are very raw.
But the GTs are still kind of road cars that you can put on the track, right? The GTs, the GT3. But this, the RS versions of them are so
hardcore. Yeah, I think
hardcore.
That's probably deliberate. Yeah. I mean, they're even probably pushing those cars more and more apart. You know, it's intentional, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
You know, I think the greatest road car, you know, we were talking beforehand, if I was going to order a Porsche today, I'd order a Targa 4 GTS when it's available. It kind of hits all the buttons for me. A little bit more power. Of course, the turbo's crazy fast, but it's just a different car. I like it a little bit more connected to the road, a little bit more visceral, a little bit more feedback. And, the daily a GT3 RS or a GT4 RS. Or
even just drive it to Cars and Coffee. You're going to get a headache after the first.
It's a race car. I mean, it's a race car, it's meant to be. Yeah. And
it's
guys,
glorious on the track.
Most of the guys that are buying that car have a stable of cars, and they pull that one out when they can. And it's fun to go beat on a little bit and put back away and, you know, hop in the comfy.
It's not like a Subaru.
Yeah, hop in your LX 570 or you know, whatever else you've got in the garage that's comfortable. So.
All right.
Or your Defender.
All right. Yeah,
or your new Range Rover.
All right. Come on back, all you off-roaders. Let's go back off-road now that I've done my little Roman rant on why. It's funny because, I don't know how well it's selling for a lot. You know, right now we're in a weird. Yeah, let's talk about that, actually. You're in the dealership business. You know more about this than me. What's going on with the supply chain?
So we across all dealerships, you know, we've got – you know, pinned up orders that obviously everyone would love to build every sold order tomorrow and have it delivered next week. Parts availability has been an issue. The manufacturers are doing a really good job of allocating it to certain models, you know, to try to meet demand. So Defender, Range Rover Sport, and new Range Rover are, you know, sold out through next year nationwide. Doesn't mean can I get a car next year? Probably, because I think you'll start to see allocation return to some normalcy next year. But right now, if we're sitting talking about today, you know, there's a pretty good wait. I mean, I've been waiting for my Bronco for 2.5 years, so I forgot what I even ordered. I've bought 3 cars since I ordered that thing. So.
You still haven't gotten it, huh?
Still don't have it.
How about can you get Defenders?
Defenders,
are they gettable?
They're getting better. I think we're down under 100 waiting on allocation. And San Diego Land Rover store is ours as well, and I'm not sure where he's at. He's probably got a little bit bigger list than I do, but you know, we're top 10 full size Range Rover and Defender dealer nationwide. So.
And speaking of Range Rover, I just went on the program and we just actually had the new Range Rover here.
Yeah.
And it's phenomenal.
It's
gorgeous. They just nailed that thing. You know,
it's very Gucci. It's gorgeous.
You know, here's my take on the Range Rover, right? Here's what I think is the magic sauce in the Range Rover, right? When you get behind the wheel of a Range Rover, every life just seems to be much better, right?
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
For
like,
sure.
No matter what's happening on the outside, right? There could be hurricanes, there could be snowstorms, there could be, you know, massive flooding, but everything seems right with the world.
Flying private jet.
Yeah, it's just there's a sense of well-being that no other vehicle, I think, instills.
Yeah, it's not. So I just drove it up to Aspen a few weeks ago, and it's just. You don't get out tired. It's very it's comfortable. It's quiet. It doesn't beat you up.
Yeah, there's a sense of well-being
it, right? And it shouldn't, but it's like next level for sure.
Yeah, yeah, and they didn't from the outside. They didn't change it around too much. It's still
an evolution.
Yeah,
you know, Rolex Submariner looks like the last year's model, but you know, every few years it gets way better.
And I actually took it off-road in California on the program, and I think we were rolling on 23s, which is not something, you know, with...
Probably not real off-road.
Not something you'd want to take on the Rubicon, for sure.
But it's pretty.
But it was comfortable, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, the suspension is so compliant. that you can get away with 23, which is like the exact wrong tire size of wheel you want, right? You probably want like a 18 or a 17 inch wheel to give you as much rubber as possible, because on 23s, what do you got? Probably maybe an inch of rubber.
Not much.
Yeah, maybe two inches.
It's all in Air Ride and in the computer, and then the headrests are noise canceling headrests.
Isn't that crazy?
I think that's part of what makes you get out of the car and you're not fatigued driving a long way. You know, because you don't have that ambient noise in the car.
Are those gettable?
Those are a huge list.
I figured,
It's even bigger than Defender.
I figured they'd be a while out there. They're not cheap, right? They start, I think we had the, I forgot the name of the model. It wasn't the Autobiography.
Probably SE.
Yeah.
And there's a third row available in the long wheelbase, and then there's a six cylinder and an eight, and then we'll have a plug-in hybrid coming.
What's the one with like the back seat that's like out of a private jet? There's one that like the back seat.
So that would be SV.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, so that's executive seating, and you can recline the seat, and it has footrests. And yeah, usually you have a driver or kids that are spoiled. Great environment.
And it's got this really kind of crazy engineered little like laptop desktop that pops out of the thing, which is
it's so cool. And you can do custom colors in that car, and you know, there's a big delay on that because they hand spray them, and it's sold out.
Are those built in the UK? I know Defenders, I think, are built like in Slovakia or
something.
Yeah,
the full size is UK. So, but gorgeous car, and you know, they plan to. This will be our largest production year ever on the new Range Rover.
And now there's a new, of course, when there's a Range Rover, there's a new Range Rover Sport, kind of like, you know, mushrooms after rain in Colorado.
Yeah. So both these products, I think, were probably going to come a little sooner, and COVID, you know, certainly impacted the full size. And I think it may have delayed even the Sport, but so that's coming, you know, Range Rover Sport. Those three are our volume, you know, models within Land Rover. We sell the most of those, and the new Sport is really cool. So definitely more toward the tuned enthusiast driver than the full-size Range Rover is. But they're not substantially different in size unless you go to the long wheelbase.
So Range Rover, Land Rover, there's a program in Spain that's happening on the new Sport that I wasn't invited to. Just saying, you know, you got a lot of love here and a lot of audience, so just – think of TFL next time you do a Spanish launch of a new Range Rover Sport. Love to be there. I guess we'll just have to watch it from afar.
Asterisk.
Which one sells more? Is it the Sport? I suspect it's the Sport, right?
For
cheaper.
Us, we're almost dead even.
Really?
In normal times, between Defender, Sport, and full size.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's incredible. I would have thought that, like, because a Range Rover is so much more expensive.
Yeah, nationally, I believe Sport nudges out the other two slightly, but the intent is for those three to be pretty equal in volume.
Now, you said something interesting. You said next year you think we'll get back to more normalcy, and I think I agree with you, because I'm seeing like used car pricing start to come back down. And, you know, when used car prices come down, then eventually new car prices are going to have to follow, right? Because there won't be this crazy thing where new cars are the same price as used cars.
Yeah, it's been crazy times for sure. I mean, you probably know people that have traded in a car with 30,000, 40,000 miles and got what they paid for it.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's the delta to the new car, you know, depending on who the dealer is and if they mark cars up or not. We don't. I mean,
that's great.
Fundamentally, we don't do that. But there are those that do, and you know, at some point, all of that will stabilize. Housing's been the same way, certainly here in Denver.
Yeah, for sure. And well, I can't believe how quickly the housing market flipped with interest rate, right? It went from being a seller's market to being a buyer's market like overnight.
Yeah, it certainly impacts it.
And so when you say you don't go adjusted market ADMs, right?
Yeah, we don't.
Is that like a corporate decision?
No, that's at our location.
Yeah, okay.
And most of the Holman locations, you know, I don't oversee those, so I can't tell you who does or doesn't, but I think most do not. We might have a special edition like the Bond Edition did,
right?
Because that's a numbered car, but that would be the only thing we would ever do that on.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
How many of those were made?
I think it was 200
Wow.
Worldwide.
Yeah. How many did you get?
We got one.
We got.
Yeah, and then we got three trophy editions of the previous trophy.
And they're bringing the trophy edition back.
Yeah, yeah, this one's super low production, so we're only getting one of this new model. And it's a two-door.
So you know how at the Biltmore, right, they do this competition?
Mm-hmm.
They did it last year?
Well, yeah.
Tommy got invited. Yeah, Tommy got invited. Mm-hmm. And last year, Lindsay Vonn was there, right? And
yeah.
She had a whole camera team following her around. And then Tommy and Jeff Glucker and Brian Doerr. So what this is basically they put on a competition where first you got to run to your defender, and then they have a series of challenges, I suppose. You have to, like, winch, or you have to, like, park the car.
It's not all about the car. Right? Right. You have to know how to read coordinates.
Or
you
navigate.
You need to know product knowledge and color choices, and you might have to canoe to an island and get a clue, or run, you know, 2 miles or a mile, or so it's physically demanding, as well as you got to know what you're doing.
So last year, you know, the celebrity and they stacked the competition. They gave Lindsay Vonn you know, a bunch of like pretty hardcore athletes, right, to help her. And I guess I'm you know, very proud of Tommy, so I'm gonna tell the story the Tommy way.
Yeah.
So they had a camera crew following her around, and Tommy's team completely, like, wiped everybody. Like, they were, like, 50 points ahead. And it was, like, 250 points, and everybody else was, like, you know, less than 200 points or something like that. And then it's funny because they didn't expect that team to win. And so their camera crew was like, hey, do you guys have any video that we could borrow? Because we were following Lindsay Vonn around. So I was really proud of Tommy that he was able to do that. And they invited him back, I think, next month. He's going back for the next one.
Yeah, it's coming up.
Yeah. And this is usually a dealer thing, right? So they usually have dealers, and the cars are actually assigned to dealers. Is that how that works?
So they have a certain number of vehicles, so you have to sign up.
Yeah.
And then you, as a result, you get one of the truck vehicles that they used in the competition.
And these are the trophy ones we were talking about.
Different car. So the trophy is a customer, similar to Trek, but it's a customer event. So if you buy the trophy, then you can go compete in the trophy.
Oh, that's right.
Event.
So this is Trek, and that's trophy.
Yeah. And then if you win in the U.S., you get to go to the international competition. So, but our team, so Socorro is going back for Trek, and then Sam and Ryan Armstrong are going. And I don't want to say anything, but they're pretty competitive, and 2 years ago we would have been in the top two, but we maybe stopped to help somebody.
Well, that's nice.
Cost us some points, so yeah. I told him don't be so nice this year.
All right. So is that happen at the same Biltmore? Is it the same course?
This one's not there. I believe it's up New Jersey, New York area this year. So
yeah. So Land Rover, Range Rover have a series of off-road courses, right? Where if you buy the vehicle, you can go and learn the skills set that you need.
Yeah, similar to the Porsche Experience Center. Yeah. When you go to Land Rover, you can go down and experience it. You know, we have an advantage here in Colorado because we can just go in our backyard with customers.
Right, but if you're on the East Coast,
sure.
Yeah, there's not a lot of off-roading there that's public. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
And so, do your customers take advantage of that? Do you see people actually using that?
Or do we do a little bit more so, just taking folks out on a trail run. You know, COVID slowed that down, so we've got some stuff coming up in September and October.
As a store, you do that?
Yeah, yeah, it's super fun.
And are you the guy leading it, or is there somebody else?
Yeah, I go, and then we usually bring Socorro for support staff in case we, you know, pop a tire or something. We can get a tire change real quick. And
Where do you go? What's the
One we have coming up will probably run Redcone.
Oh, nice! Yeah, that's a great trail.
Yeah.
You saved our butts when we ran Redcone. You gave us wheels and tires.
Yeah, we had some takeoffs, I think, from Big Bertha. So
yeah, we had to leave the truck up there. Yeah. It was hilarious because I pop a wheel and a tire, and then Tommy does the same thing. That was pretty.
Yeah,
funny.
The sidewall on that tire is not off-road friendly.
No. That was
let's call it what it is. It's grossly underperforming for what it needs.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a Rubicon friendly trail.
No, rated tire. No. So let's talk about what's next. So you just built Kong. Any other plans? You got any other?
So we've got some more plans for Kong. Yeah. We are working with Tim Scully, or coming up to work with Tim Scully, to see if we can't figure out how to get a front locker, air locker in that.
Like an ARB.
Yes, yeah. And then when we do that, we'll need to upgrade the axle shafts with RCV.
And how strong are the Defender shafts? I mean, you know, you said you're going to upgrade your...
We haven't had any issues. We've seen a couple of rear shocks that have failed.
Who does the shocks for them, you know?
I'm sure they sub them out to someone, but I'm not sure.
But they're not
sure.
Like Fox or King. No, they're not
there's
like
not
one of them.
A proprietary brand on them.
So,
you know, tie rods and steering box will become the weak point if we get the locker up front. So, you know, we'll explore trying to beef that up.
I think you're really pushing the envelope. You know, does Land Rover like that, or are they like, stop it?
Yeah, no, they're fans. Yeah. You know, my whole intent is to show this is a super capable truck, because when it came out, there were doubters. And we certainly won some over on the Rubicon Trail, not just in our group with Rovicon, but, you know, we had an audience kind of everywhere we went. You know, they were excited to see it out there. And they
were there a lot of, like, GP people like, holy cow?
You know, we had a couple guys. I had heard one guy in Little Slough said, oh, man, that thing's going to flop. And we drove right up it after a classic struggled to get up. We did the hard bypass because my whole intent was to run the trail without any breakage. Next year we'll run the big boulders and little sluice in the middle there. But, I mean, we drove right up that. It didn't even blink. Mm. And it did that all weekend long. You know, people would walk up to watch it not do anything. You know, it's like a car wreck, right? You want to see what happened. And then we just drive right up it, and they'd be like, wow.
I think the reason that there's this kind of disparity between, like, what you guys are doing and what, you know, corporate's doing is because of where you're doing it, right? So I know they have an off-road testing area at HQ in the UK, but in general, Europe doesn't have a lot of, you know, I've been to Europe a bunch, and there's not a lot of hard off-roading. You have to go to, like, Northern Africa or someplace like that to actually, you know, get into the kind of stuff that we have. And so for them, I think you know, the stuff that you guys are doing is not something that is natural, because it's just that geography isn't there.
Yeah, muddy dirt roads with puddles is not really
right. Yeah,
hard.
It's good on video, right? When you drive down into that muddy like pond.
I mean, the GM of our Lexus store at Kudu Lexus Greenwood Village. I think he drove a Caprice Classic up over Ophir Pass out of Telluride. So, you know, you could do a lot of things in a lot of different vehicles, but you know, this is legit stuff, and it's punishing on the vehicle.
Yeah,
and that's the difference, is it's just absolutely punishing on the vehicle.
So I think what they did, or Land Rover did, which was very smart, was they leaned kind of into the lifestyle aspect of it, right? So
sure. You
can go and you can get the roof rack, you can get the tent, you can get the little box on the side, you can get the ladder, right? Mm-hmm. This is more, I would call it overlanding than off-roading, right? Mm-hmm. It's like the lifestyle. I want to put the canoe on the thing, right?
Yeah. It's an exceptional overlander for sure.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
But the Voyager rack, you can put a 4-man tent up there, and I mean, it's phenomenal. Our whole point is to prove it can do more, and like we said earlier, 95-99% are never going to do the stuff we do, because they're going to look at it and go, I'm not going over that.
Yeah, and I think what manufacturers do at their peril is they sometimes, and I've seen it over and over again, and Jeep is very good at this, actually. They're the ones who don't do this, right? They don't ignore the fringes, and I'm, you know, or the
they plan for it,
right? And I think Bronco is also there.
Bronco mostly planned for it, but steering and tie rods are an issue, but
they don't. They understand that people do in North America take these things on very hard trails, and they take that into account when they actually not just market the vehicle, but when they design the vehicle and when they build the vehicle. Right? There was a lot of consternation among Jeep fans when the JL came up, because everybody thought they were going to go to independent suspension. And in the end, you know, I've heard internally that there was, you know, a hair's
breadth. I think there was pretty close.
Right,
they
it came within
that.
A hair's breadth of actually going. But at the end, the hardcore guy said, no, we want, you know, solid axles, because it's easier to modify. You know, they work. It's you know, it's kind of like the difference between.
It's a tractor.
It
just works.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, and it works, but it works the detriment of on-road performance, right?
For sure.
It makes it, you know, you get death wobbles.
Yeah, I mean, I think the 392 and the XR, they've certainly done a they spent a lot of time tuning that suspension, and it's way better.
Yeah,
than it was.
Agreed.
I mean, Bronco. Plus, you know, we have a 4Runner. They're very comparable on the trail. This is actually very comparable to those because they lift a tire. This lifts a tire. It's kind of normal if you have independent front suspension. We are not running a rear sway bar in this, which gives us a lot more articulation in the rear. So it's kind of reverse of a Jeep, where you disconnect the front and leave the rear. We're going the other way.
Yeah, so that's also...
Wakes it up a bunch.
You said something interesting, too. Obviously, solid axles don't lift tires, right?
It's got to be a lot.
It's a teeter-totter, right?
Yeah.
If there's one up in the air, it's really... You're probably at an angle where you're going to roll.
Yeah, where you're going to feel the rock or whatever on the road on a solid axle, which gives you a less... You know, the ride isn't as good as independent front, for sure.
So, you know, I think that, like I said, I think that the manufacturers, and I think Land Rover leaned into kind of the overlanding, leaned into the lifestyle part of it, but that disappointed a lot of people because the previous Defender was pretty much a hardcore off-roader, right? That was a track. I mean, Land Rover, first of all, you know, they copied Jeep, let's face it. So they kind of copied Jeep, made it aluminum, which was unique. But then they pioneered something, which was they were the first to put luxury into that formula, into the off-road formula, and they still do that. But the old Defender, like you said, was a tractor. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't built to be luxurious. It was built to be very off-road
worthy. Yeah, it was purposeful. I think they only imported like 5,000 90s to the United States.
It was like
over
93,
3 years.
Over a period of a few years. Yeah, and those are very valuable.
So we're remembering this tiny, tiny, tiny little production number where, you know, these are, you know, they're building lots of these for the masses. And, you know, we ski, we got kids on ski team, an awesome ski vehicle, super easy to clean. I mean, you guys had one, you just blow it out with the leaf blower and wipe it down with a wet towel and there's no carpet, it's clean instantly.
So that's the
part I love about it.
Out of the three Defenders, right, the 90, the 110, and the 130, which one is the most popular?
110.
Okay. Yeah. So 90 is a two door. 110 is a four door. You can get it with or without rear seats. And the 130 is the big long suburban of Defenders.
It gives you additional storage behind the third row seat. 130 hasn't hit the showroom yet, so we don't know what the take rate will be on that. I think it'll be more than 90, but less than 110.
And how about in terms of engine? What's the most popular engine? Is it the hybrid or is it the V8?
We're almost 50-50, 6 and 4. I mean, the 4 is really good.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of power.
300,
yeah.
Except for ours.
Yeah, well, you had that, but.
So I heard through the grapevine, so if you guys don't know, we had three Defenders, not because we wanted three, but because ours kept breaking, and then there were some issues with the winch. But I heard that they finally took our engine back to the UK, and they tore it apart, and they couldn't figure out what was wrong with it. And then eventually they figured out that the serpentine belt was not cut straight, so it wasn't, you know, exactly the right length, and it was like wavy, and that caused basically it caused the engine to throw a code because it was slipping, and that's what it was.
Went in to protect itself, probably.
Yeah, because it messed with the timing. So if they had just changed out the serpentine belt, it was like bad production. So
hard to know.
Yeah, but it took them, you know, a lot of time to figure that out. But most of those four-cylinder turbos are really good.
Yeah, I mean, we have that engine in a lot of product. And
yeah, it's also in a whole bunch of other vehicles. It's in the what other ones is it in?
Jag uses it in several models as well. But it's in Velar, it's in F-Pace, XE. I'm not sure what else.
You don't sell Jaguar, right?
Not yet. So our San Diego store has Jaguar, and
I think you have to do both, yeah.
We have to do some showroom improvements. We're just waiting on some facility requirements from the factory, and then we'll be adding Jag.
Yeah, we just bought a Jaguar. Did you see ours? It's a 2002.
Yeah, it's a classic.
Six and a half thousand.
Let's go run them.
All right, so I was saying, what's next for this? So you're gonna do some more runs?
Yes. So a couple more trail runs this year, a couple customer events, and then this winter we're gonna try to get the front locker figured out for the community. I mean, there's a lot of people asking for that. I will say Ralph Sarek, he's been running his two dories on steel springs with, I believe, a 4-inch lift and 35s, and No, I don't think he even has lockers, but he wheels the crud out of that thing. And
how's the air suspension holding up?
I have had no issues. We've had one airbag failure in Ure on a unit with 60,000 miles. Some gravel got in there and rubbed a hole in it.
Now the big
this is a hardcore used off-road Defender 110.
Now sales point of the new air suspension is that they've got apparently two bags, right? So you've got the big bag and then there's a smaller bag. Because usually what happens with air suspension is when you max it out, when you put it in its off-road mode, you then lose all suspension travel and it becomes like a goat cart because it becomes very stiff. So in the Defender, Land Rover is very proud of the fact that there's another bag, right?
It's like off-road extra.
Yeah,
off-road plus.
That gives you a little bit of like.
So when you select rock crawl mode, it takes you up an additional. I think it's an inch or an inch and a half on top of that, but it rides really stiff, but you're using that to clear an obstacle and then you bring it. So I ran most of the Rubicon in normal ride height, normal ride height. But as far as the airbags, they were in standard ride height.
Okay.
And then if we got to a really big obstacle, I would lift it up, get, you know, my tires placed on it or over it, and then we drop it back down.
You know what the ground clearance is on that, on Kong, normal ride height? What is it? Over 10 inches,
it's probably 11 or 12 now.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. You still have, I mean, you've got control arms under there, and they're going to limit you. You look underneath a JL, the rear shocks hang way down. I mean, way down below the pumpkin. So
that's the thing that Chevy loves to do too. The mounts for the rear shocks.
Yeah,
are always,
it gives you a longer shock travel, which gives you more droop, which is what you need. It's not so much up travel; it's more down travel is what you want.
So let me ask you this: before we wrap this up, we're running out of time. You know, when we started our off-road channel, one of the things we started to do was to review side-by-sides.
Uh-huh.
And I got to tell you, once you're in a side-by-side, it's hard to go back. right, because I have a bad back, and the Rubicon Trail for me is murder. But side by sides just make that kid's play, right? Because then you're going from like maybe 8 or 10 inches of travel to like 17 or 20 inches of travel. It just becomes a whole. And then the power to weight ratio just changes. Have you done side by sides?
I've done side by sides. My hard part with side by sides is you need a truck to pull it, a trailer,
yes,
somewhere to park. You hope your stuff's still there when you come back. And for the same money, you can buy a pretty capable off-road vehicle
expensive.
Can drive around town.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm not a huge fan, but I do admire their capability.
And, you know, a Can-Am or Can-Am Maverick or Polaris Turbo, those are $30,000 rigs.
Yeah.
Right. And that's before you start adding, you know, all the bells and whistles like radios and, you know, roofs and glass and all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, no matter what you buy, you can always accessorize forever. You know, you're never done.
I'll tell you one story, and you might like this. I was just on a Honda program, and Honda's not going to like me telling the story, but I was going to tell it. And we were there with a bunch of automotive journalists. So we were driving some Hondas, and they decided to let us run. This was in Nashville at the race course. So they had set up like an off-road course and let us run the Talon, which is there like, and the Talon is actually unique because unlike most side-by-sides, it has a dual clutch transmission. So most have CVTs, right? Which is good for a side-by-side because if you overheat them, they just blow the belt and you can put another belt on them. So I was like, I don't know if these kind of automotive journalists know how to like drive a side-by-side because they had some pretty tight corners. So I was like, you know what? I'll just go last. And on the very first lap, they tried to kind of put him into the corner the way you would like a car. And a car, you know, if you put it in a corner, it'll eventually lose grip and slide. But what happens with a side-by-side is it doesn't slide. It catches and it rolls.
Right.
So, you know, on the first lap, the guy in front of me rolled it right away. Luckily, he was fine.
He didn't put his arm out.
No, and that was another
thing. A lot of people put their arm out.
A friend of mine actually did that on his wedding day and had to get airlifted because he completely crushed his hand.
Yeah.
But luckily, they had the mesh. So you couldn't put your arm out, right? That's just a natural instinct. You want to put your arm out to stop yourself.
Even if you know not to do it,
you still
know,
do it
happens.
Yeah, you want to hold on to the steering wheel. And so Honda kind of gave us this come to God talk. And then we went again. And then the second lap, the guy in front of me once again, different guy this time, rolled it. They don't slide, right? That's not how they work, especially with those tires.
They hook up too much.
They hook up too much, that's what they're designed to do. But it's changing, you know. You're out there on the trails, and I remember I used to go to Moab, and it was like guys on dirt bikes and mountain bikes, and now it's all, and then it was ATVs, and now it's all side by sides. Mm-hmm. And I'm out there, and I always worry about the side by side guys, because you'll see them out there, and these things are as close to, like, you know, trophy trucks as you're going to get without actually owning a trophy truck, right? They're that good off road,
yeah.
And I think people tend to underestimate just how quickly you can get yourself in danger. So I'll see people out there without seatbelts. I'll see people out there without helmets. I'll see little babies in the back of these things. These are like, it's like putting a baby in a race car. It's not a good idea.
And I wonder, you know, as we move forward coming off COVID, you know, a lot of people bought side-by-sides through that for something to do, right?
Yeah, I think what happened with COVID was, like, the first 9 months, people were like, no, I'm going to save my money.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to hunker on home, I'm just going to...
And then they got
bored.
Crazy, yeah. And they, you know, and so I wonder how many of those summer of next year, because we've seen half on the trail this year versus last year. And I wonder, you know, what is that going to look like in that community? I don't know. I mean, maybe they come back and they're back out again, but it's definitely gone way down.
Yeah, and then it's expensive because you need a trailer, and then you need a truck to pull the trailer, right? The beauty of this, of Kong and of your Jeep, is you just drive it out there.
Yeah.
Right.
And then you drive it home and take the top off and enjoy it in town. And
yeah.
Can't run your side by side. Well, some towns you can.
I don't mean to trash these guys with side by sides. You know, but there's, you know, it's always a new kids in town who are going to get, you know, I remember when.
Yeah. We call those the steel bumper guys. You know, when the Lincoln Town Car got rid of the chrome bumper, you know, they ruined it.
But I will say one thing about side by side. So I've run in Moab Top of the World a few times, and you run it with like a group of people, and it's going to take you most of the day, right? Because you're just going slow. And you run it by yourself, it might take you an hour and a half, 2 hours. I ran that thing in a side-by-side in like 25 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. It's super capable for sure.
So, and they're just different forms of off-road fun. Well, Steve, thank you very much. If people are looking to check out your dealership, where should they look?
So that's Land Rover Denver. Again, we're part of Holman Automotive, and massive company. We've got... largest fleet company in the world. We have ARI, and we've got.
You got any cool used vehicles right now that are on the lot that people might be interested in?
We always do.
Yeah,
we've got Porsches and Bentleys and G Wagons.
Do people trade these on Range Rovers and Land Rovers?
All the time.
Yeah,
all the time. We get pickup trucks, full size pickup trucks.
I believe
all
it.
The time.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's these very high-end pickup trucks, right? The High Country and the Chevy, right? Mm-hmm. Every brand has their own, you know, the King Ranch and the Ford.
Yeah.
And it seems like people, you know, once they want luxury, they want luxury.
Yeah, I mean, we just traded for a Laramie or Limited Ram 2500 Cummins. I mean, everything under the sun.
And will you sell those, or will you like...
Oh, no, we sell everything, yeah.
You don't, like, take them to the auction?
Yeah, we sell a lot of pickup trucks. You wouldn't think a Land Rover store would be a pickup truck store, but we are.
How about, I was just talking to Lexus. I was just driving a new RX, and they made the statement that 35% of RX owners go back and buy another RX. What's your gut feeling about Land Rover, Range Rover owners? Do most of them come back?
It's a super high percentage, super loyal brand. Yeah. Definitely in Defender Sport, full size for sure. Mm. They might be more transient, like in Vogue and Discovery Sport. And then Discovery,
that's
which
another
is...
another one that's got that four-cylinder, the Evoque.
Yeah.
I was thinking of that.
Yeah. You know, Discovery falls right below Defender and even overlaps in pricing, but it has a third row as well.
And how does that sell?
Not as big a volume. That kind of tailors more to that overlander person. When we brought Defender in, actually Discovery sales went up.
Really?
Because Defender wasn't available, and they're like, oh, well, that's pretty cool. It's
very similar.
You know, got a third row seat.
Very similar.
They're similar. Yeah. I mean, they look physically different. Look very different, but mechanically very similar.
Yeah, there's a part of me, because Discovery's, Discovery 1, Discovery 2 had all kinds of fatal flaws, and then LR3, there was a period of like 2015 to 2005 to 2008, I think, where they were completely bulletproof. And then, of course, because the LRs had really kind of hurt their reputation. They went back to Discovery 5, right? And so there's a part of me that, that wants to actually buy a Discovery and do something like that with it, just because it's more of the...
Yeah, they do make... So the lift is very similar for the Discovery. And Austin makes
it would be unusual. And I remember before Defender, you were doing that too, right? You were doing a lot of
that. So we were doing a kind of a mild stage one with lift rods from Lucky 8 and then about a 33.5-inch metric tire, but a mud terrain, a real tire,
and for those,
and then roof racks so that you could get a tent up there.
And actually, I kind of forgot about that, and thanks for reminding me, right? So I said that solid axle vehicles are easy to lift. Actually,
the easiest is lift rods.
Is lift rods, yeah. So they're these little plastic rods that you can replace for the factory ones that fool the truck into thinking that it's lower than it really is.
Yeah.
And so the standard height on the air suspension.
It moves your standard height.
Yeah.
And you can do up to 2 inches on those.
They're like $100, right? They're not expensive.
They're a couple hundred bucks, yeah. And then, you know, some labor. But, you can put them on in your garage, too, if you're mechanically savvy. But we kind of like the 1-inch or 1.5-inch better because it still gives you some droop, some additional.
Suspension travel.
Yeah.
So I was wrong. They're actually
easy. That's the easiest one.
Yeah, but
so we're doing about a lot of those on Defender. A lot of folks are going 32.5, 33.5 metric tire, way better tire, lift rods, rack. That's pretty common.
How big of a tire can you go with lift rods before it starts to rub, you know, on the fenders or on the wheel?
It really, really depends on the tire and the wheel. So on these, that tire is more squared off on the tread to the sidewall. So not as you'd have to trim more. If you go like a DuraTrack, or a KM3, which the KM3 is horrible in the snow, so I wouldn't recommend it. But
yeah, those are mud terrains.
It's a miserable tire. And in fact, I just took them off my Jeep because they're awful. But
the KO3s are good, especially if there's two kinds. There's the snow, it's the snowflakes, right? They're snow rated.
Right.
Those are actually good.
They're siped and they're better.
Yeah.
KO2 is a good kind of all around tire, but it's a little more squared off like that, so you might have to trim more. So it's super subjective. I'm going to beat my drum. I wish that Land Rover had planned for a larger tire in the front of that vehicle.
Yeah, I mean, I can see it.
They intentionally.
I could see the distance.
They intentionally. Probably didn't. Maybe in the
warranty
stuff? The redesign. I don't know. I can't answer for them. But it was clear that they had no intention of putting a big tire under that vehicle.
And it looks so good.
Yeah, it looks like it should look, right?
Yeah, it looks so good. Yeah.
We everybody comes in and they go, I want that. And then they find out that's pretty expensive to do. And we end up doing lift rods and a bigger tire and they're super happy.
Yeah. The problem often too with going bigger is you can go pizza cutter, but those don't look good. Right. Cause you don't want that rubbing. So if you go a little narrower, then you could potentially go bigger, but then you have this tire that just looks weird.
Yeah. I think the best setup for longevity and everything's probably the 4-inch subframe lift and 35 or 34.5.
But now you're talking tens of thousands.
It's expensive, yes.
Yeah. So but those are lifts that hit hard.
We have that in the Jeeps, so it's all relative. So, how far do you want to go?
So do you ever do those kinds of lifts on customer vehicles if people want
them? So we'll do up to 35 in the 4-inch, yes.
Okay, all right.
And we can do up to 2 per month. And we just added 8 stalls to our shop, so we're expanding and got some more space to be able to do
that. So if you guys are out there on the West Coast or East Coast and you're looking for somebody to actually help you, come and buy a truck.
Yeah, and even if, you know, I get calls every day, you know, hey, here's what I'm thinking. I just want to pick your brain. I'm happy to tell you. You know, we've tried a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And we're going to keep pushing it and we'll keep trying things. And, you know, I usually talk them out of some tire choices or sizes, depending on what they want to do.
Well, thank you very much for sharing.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, sharing your experience and sharing your time.
Really, I want to thank you know Don and Greg and Eric at Rovicon for getting me out there, and all the guys that were on the trail. It was a super fun trip, and you know, it's the first new Defender that made it. So I think that attempted it or completed it, and we did it without any breakage. And
I
huge shout out to them.
I can't explain to you guys that have not been out there on the Rubicon train just how hard that is.
Yeah. There's a lot of broken vehicles along the trail.
Oh, there are.
I mean, a lot.
Yeah.
Like, every few hundred, you know, yards, there's somebody fixing something.
Yeah, like I say, you know, it's so different from what we're used to in Colorado or in Moab. It's just such a excruciatingly difficult course. And to be able to do it in a new Defender just speaks volumes about the Defender.
Yeah.
And your you know, customization of it.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. See you next time.
All right. We'll see you. Thanks.
And remember, check out All TFL if you want to check out all of our podcasts, all of our stories. And yeah, thanks for joining me, Steve. See you next time. Ciao.
Thanks.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.